Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Justin Bourne alongside me. Get used to the voices. Of course, you know, well, let's be honest. You hear one of us plenty more often than the other on the station. I'm talking about my wonderful co-host, Justin Bourne. Get used to us through voices because we'll be here with you in this time slot for the bulk of the month of August. Aside from a little vacation. We're not robots. We got to get out and see this beautiful country of ours, people. I'm Brent Gunning. That's Justin Bourne chuckling away in the background. Bourney, how you doing today?
I'm great, man. This is going to be fun. It's, not hockey talk for me, which is very refreshing. I'm a sports fan first and foremost. I shouldn't say that. I'm a hockey guy first and foremost, but I am a sports fan. Just behind that, I constantly tell my bosses, anyone who will listen to me, I would like to talk about more sports, and I get to do it now, and with someone as wonderful as yourself. And Sam McKee, he'll be with us a little bit too, so it's going to be fun.
That's right. Our producer, Sam McKee, is going to be a part of this program as well. You will be as well. Text line always available to you, 590, 590. Please include your name and location. Of course, today we're talking about the big Kyle Lowry news. So your favorite Lowry and Raptors moment. What should a inevitable statue look like? We want to hear from that on the text line today. So get those texts in, and our producer, McKee, will read some of those to us. And let's be honest, pepper us with his own takes, because Sam can't come in here and just read the words in front of him. He's way too opinionated of a human. And that's why we love having him with us. But Bourne, you say you like other sports. So what are you most excited about to talk? Are you a big NFL guy? We're going to be creeping towards that as the month of September draws closer and closer. Yeah. Obviously, we're deep in the throes of Jays, NBA free agency. Like, what is your eye kind of most drawn to sports-wise outside of course, hockey?
Well, I would say there's a little bit of a succession for me, but I would say my favorite team outside of the NHL is probably the Toronto Blue Jays, all sports. And New York Jets are right there. So I am an NFL guy, but I'm a New York Jets fan. I know, it's terrible. It's a terrible thing.
I think that proves your fandom. If you, like, you come on here and you say, I'm a Cowboys fan. Well, you're a part of something at least. It hasn't gone great for you, but at least you're a part of something. Jets, you wallow in misery. You know, you're not a Leafs fan, so you thought, what would closely enough replicate that experience? And you just attached yourself to the New York Jets.
Well, perfect. What's sad is, like, you know, when I first started becoming a real Jets fan, they weren't terrible. Like, Mark Sanchez became a punchline for a number of reasons, but they actually had, like, a couple of decent years there. That was, like, when I was first done with hockey, so I was able to watch the NFL every Sunday. Sanchez, at the time, we had hope for the guy. At one point, they beat the Tom Brady-led Patriots to get to the, you know, in the playoffs. Like, it wasn't all bad, if people don't remember. So I kind of really dug in as in my Jets fandom then. They have made playoffs in 10 straight years, so it's been bleak since, hoping Zach Wilson turns things around. But then, so I gave you two teams, the Jays and the Jets, but the league I follow the most outside of hockey is the NBA. So Kyle Lowry, the Raptors, I love this stuff. I'm excited to weigh in on that today.
Every league is just trying to catch up to the NBA in terms of the offseason circus. The NFL is a 12-month-a-year product. They are pumping out news, but it's the combine. It's the draft. You got to be pretty geeky to get into a lot of that stuff. For the NBA, it seems like roughly 6 weeks, massive superstar potentially changing teams. Does that interest you? It's impossible not to get sucked in by this stuff. And then just to bring it back to the Jets for a second, kind of sounds like you might be the problem. I know there's been plenty of stink put on the Jets, but just timeline-wise, sounds like you might have to wear a little bit of that.
That's fine. I agree with you that, like, there's some pride in being awful. And at the same time, there's pride in being awful and not abandoning the team. I am going to stick through this. But at the same time, like, since I had kids, it's harder to follow every Sunday, so I've, like, drifted. Now the kids are getting a little older, I'm kind of hoping I'm able to get back in right when I expect them to be good again. For my own sake, I assume you're all Toronto sports teams, your Raptors, your Jays, your Leafs.
My baseball fandom's weird. It's weird. Wow. I've never done this on air. I walked myself into this. Yeah, my baseball fandom's weird. I didn't have a lot of Jays fans in my life growing up. Obviously, a little bit of affinity, you know, being in the city and stuff. But it's never been one that grabbed me as much as the others did. Raps, full bore, Leafs. whatever is beyond that, to the point where I should probably seek help at certain points in times. But Jays have never really caught me quite in the same way. I mean, look, I love going down to the ballpark. I love crushing way too expensive of beers. I love getting on my feet for two strikes. There are plenty of pitchers me doing so, celebrating way too loudly at David Price debuts. I've been there for lots of cool games, but it just never really has grabbed me quite the same way the others have. But, you know, to bring it back to why that makes me such a wonderful radio host, I get to have the objective eye towards this team. No biases regarding me and the Jays. But yes, otherwise, that's all great. Toronto sports all the time. A bit of an NFL nomad. I started out, I am how old I am. I'm a 31-year-old male. Tom Brady was ascending when I'm 11 years old and grabbing hold of an NFL team. And then he left, and now I don't know what to do. Am I a Patriots fan? Am I a Brady fan? So I'm kind of the worst NFL fan, and you should absolutely hammer me for that, because that's kind of the wrong way to go about it. But at the end of the day, no, I just picked the guy I liked when I was 11, and now he's somewhere else.
There's, like, actual research been done on this. Like, the teams that were the best when you were, like, between 8 and 12 or 13 or whatever it is, like, that's almost certainly who you end up liking, unless your parents have brainwashed you prior to 8 years old into liking, oh, I don't know, the Leafs, say, if you're in Toronto. But that's generally the way that people form their fandom. So with me, it's like, if you're from New York, you're either from the island, in which case you like, right, the Jets, the Mets, the Islanders. That's kind of the way you go,
all the cool
right?
teams.
Yeah, I think so. And then otherwise you're like Giants, Rangers, Knicks. It's not nearly as cool. So, you know, my Long Island roots led me to the Jets, so I have that excuse.
Now, I didn't know we were going to get there, and we'll talk about the big Kyle Lowry news today, but you're a father. You just talked about, you know, teams are good or you're brainwashed into liking them. Will your kids be brainwashed into becoming Jets fans at the very least, if nothing else? I imagine Jays as well. What's happening there? Will you just let them pick their own sporting path?
Dude, my kid's 5 this month. I can't get him to like a sport, let alone a team. I honestly can't. I don't know what to do. Like, I don't want to be the dad that like pushes it on your kid, but like sometimes your kids just like what they like. You know, my kid likes, I don't know. I have no idea what my kid likes, but it isn't sports. I'm doing my best here.
There you go. I'm working on it as well. I've got little golf clubs in the living room to try to work out, but 8 months old, so I should probably ease it back a little. And I should probably get this car back on the road. I'm happy to have talked about our various sporting fandoms. One area we kind of cross on that, of course, Raptors, Kyle Lowry. Big news. He will not be back. I think a lot of people kind of saw the way this was going and expected that Lowry wouldn't be back with the team. Obviously, you know, you can go back to the deadline and say it felt like it was probably done at that point in time. Were you at all surprised? Were you holding out any hope that there'd be a world where Lowry would be back for that big final contract with the Raps, or were you expecting this to go the way it did?
I was expecting it to go the way it did. And if I'm being 100% honest, like, I don't hate that it happened the way it did. Like, I don't like watching a player age out to the point where it's like difficult to watch them, or they were formerly great and you're trying to force it to work anymore. It's almost like what he did here is able to stand on its own now because he ended it before it got bad in his career. And I don't know that it's going to get bad, and maybe it'll work out great for Miami. I would love to see him win another championship with Jimmy Butler and PJ Tucker, just be the toughest, meanest team in the NBA. I would love that, but I'm okay with him leaving now from the Raptors. He did what he had to do. You mentioned the statue. It's going to happen, but I'm happy he left before it got awkward.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would have loved to have seen him be back here and ride off into the sunset, but knowing everything we know about Kyle Lowry, it seems to me he would think the sunset's a lot farther away than it actually is,
right?
And there's a world where, hey, Malachi Flynn could use some more minutes, and Fred VanVleet, he'd like to hold on to the car keys, not just look at them occasionally. So I think that's a good point to be made by you, that it would, with a guy like Lowry and how everything you like about him, that he is a take-charge guy and he's demonstrative and he wants things done his way, that would almost certainly come back to bite you at the tail end of whatever you know his next contract or his second contract kind of looked like. In terms of in terms of you know what he means to this market, I was kind of going back and forth on it, and I don't know that there's a guy, and you know we'll bring in our producer Sam McKee on this, of course. Always love to get his thoughts. I don't know that there's a guy in this market that is unanimously has the approval rating that he does, or just as high as it goes. Because you think about, okay, the last title team before the Raptors, and it was the back-to-back Jays teams. And yes, Carter, hit the bomb that is one of the most famous hits in baseball history. But that always felt like a unit, a group of guys. Alomar, another bright star. I don't think anybody's going to hold him up as the guy you want to fly the banner for your city going forward. Ooh. Now. So when you start to look at all of the different names that have meant something, Matt Sundin's Kyle Lowry without a ring. So you can't look at that legacy and do it. So, yeah, I'll bring you in, McKee. But just in terms of the legacy on what he means to the city and if there's anybody who can surpass it, I can't think of a guy in recent memory.
No, I in recent memory, definitely not. But I think, you know, the Vlad thing is heading in that direction, depending mm-hmm. on how this goes for the next however many years they have him under control and how long he ends up staying here and how high they actually get. But, I mean, Vlad is a transcendent guy who's going to be one of the best players in the majors for, I think, a lot of his career. So I think that's one guy that could be in there. But, yeah, I mean, I was okay. You know, I was kind of disconnected from the Lowry thing. It happened. I was in a hockey dressing room last night. I wasn't really talking about it a whole lot. And then I kind of woke up this morning and I was going through the Twitter and I saw that video of his kids introducing him when he was when they were in the bubble mm-hmm. and they did like all the family introductions. And they did that video, and I honestly, at the time, I thought that was one of the most beautiful things. And then to see that this morning and see the smile on his face and how much I love Kyle and having him be on another team. And look, I wouldn't necessarily say that the Heat are like blood rivals of the Raptors, but the Heat and the Raps have played in some big games. It's always a gritty matchup whenever they play against them.
They already took one of our stars.
It's going to suck, man. Like, I'm telling you right now, like, you know, Hyman going to Edmonton, that's going to suck for Leaf fans. I don't think it's on the same level as this, but Kyle Lowry on the Miami Heat is going to be a real kick in the you-know-what for Raps fans watching them play. Because, look, you see what the Raptors are doing here. I don't know how good a year it's going to be next year. Like, I have no feel on what this team's going to be in terms of, you know, record or where they stand in the Eastern Conference. And it's the Heat are shaping up to look like a pretty good squad.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. There's no doubt it's going to be tough. The Raptors look to me like a team that is like a beautiful supporting cast for a star they don't have. Like, yeah. Who at some point is going to be, you know, the guy in the big minutes? You know, I understand Freddie VanVleet can shoot it and have some clutch moments, but man, it's tough. It's tough to see Pascal or anyone else. They're missing that guy. So I agree, it's going to be tough, but I don't know. I have this real thing about legacies and the ways that things end, and it just feels like a clean way to go with Kyle. Like, to Gunner's point, like, if, you know, he thought if he's aging out and he thinks he deserves more minutes, he's never been shy to say what he wants to say. He clashed with Dwayne Casey in the early days. He's not afraid to go at coaches, staff, you name it, when things don't go well. So I love the clean ending. As much as it sucks to see him go, I don't think it's a championship team even with him. So it almost feels like better to have a clean exit.
Yeah, and they're doing the sign and trade thing, so they're going to get some sort of assets back for him, obviously. But, like, it's been a complicated relationship with Kyle. Like, it's been a long road, right? Because, you know, the playoff exits and the stuff where he wasn't too good with DeMar and those bad, like, the bad losses to Cleveland. I mean, guess what? Everybody lost to LeBron, so I'm not going to put that on them too badly. It's not like, oh, they're the only team to ever lose to LeBron. Like, yeah, guess what? He did that to everybody for 10 years. So I think there was a bit of a complicated relationship. And even after that game one when they won the championship, when they lost to Orlando in the game one and he had 0 points, boy, I had some texts that I would like to take back after that game. But I really think even up until he won the championship, and obviously that's a huge thing, but I feel like it was even a flawed relationship up until they won it on that June 13th of 2019. I really do think that was a real, obviously, cherry on the sundae for his legacy. But before that, I still think it was a little bit complicated. Do you think I'm wrong here, Gunner? Or, like, I don't think it was the approval rating was 100% like it is now before the championship.
I think you nailed it, but I think that just makes it all the more impressive. We like flawed people. We love a redemption story, a redemption arc.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, when I'm sitting here doing the thing of, okay, how's his legacy stack up against all of the other kind of guys in this market right now? If we want to go back 18 months ago or even just before the playoffs, boy, it felt like Austin Matthews was tracking on that. We mentioned Vlad Jr. He's putting it together. The differences between a Vlad Jr. or an Austin Matthews is that they're supposed supposed to be this. Kyle Lowry was always seen as a headache, as a problem child, as someone who was good, but never quite good enough to lead his team. He always wanted to be the leader, but never had the capability to be it. And then he grew up right before our eyes here in this city and exceeded, I'm sure, even his own expectations. If there was some way to do the, you know, the analytics for just a you know, let's call it war for all sports, I guarantee you Vladdy's war for his career in Toronto will be higher than whatever Kyle Lowry's is. I will go pretty close to Austin Matthews, same deal. Kyle Lowry, what he exceeded in terms of what was expected of him coming here, I think that's what makes his legacy just that little more special. McKee, you always talk about it. As much as we love stars in this market, we love guys who stink. If you stink and you try and you become kind of good, that's who...
Zach Hyman might get a statue.
Well, think about it. That's kind of what I'm talking about here, Bourne. Well, those are the guys we love in this market.
Yeah, we always joke that, you know, like, talk about those teams with Sundin on it, and there are probably more Darcy Tucker jerseys from that era than there were Sundin jerseys. Like, it's just the type – Kyle Lowry is such a perfect star matchup with what this city likes in terms of, you know, like, the determination, the setting the, you know, the crazy screens, the getting the charges, leading the league and taking charges every year. There's just so many different things that he did that – I saw our boy Bunk tweet about how much it's going to hurt when the Heat fans or the Heat media are saying, oh, he just does so much stuff that doesn't show up on the box score. And it's just so true because we've had that conversation here for 9 years where it's like, oh, you know, his numbers aren't – they don't jump off the page at you, but he just does so much more than what shows up on the box score. So it's going to be – like, I'm a fatalist when it comes to sports and Toronto sports, and I get upset about things and – I gotta say, I'm still really upset about that. Like, they couldn't bring him back. I completely understand why they didn't do it. I was even in the camp they should have traded him at the deadline. But seeing him in a Heat jersey, seeing him somewhere else, now that this is real, it's gonna be tough, fellas.
Yeah, it is. And it's so funny. We always focus on how we feel about it here in this market, and of course we should. And you're upset still a little bit that, you know, they weren't able to get any assets for him at the deadline. Of course, you want assets if you can get them. But if you're a Miami fan, if you're sitting there going, this guy's willing to come here, all we had to give up was some fringy asset that we're now going to give up anyways to get this guy to make the deal happen, it's just funny how differently things are kind of construed in the markets there. In terms of what this means for the Raps, I think obviously – I don't want to say he's the biggest winner in this because the team is hurt by it, but there's nobody who should be smiling more today than Malachi Flynn. Fred VanVleet was going to get his opportunity to be whatever Fred VanVleet was going to be in this offense with Lowry there, without Lowry there, but this just allows things to move forward for this. You know, maybe another guy who I think it's really a question mark in terms of what it means for him is Pascal Siakam. He's been so up and down throughout his entire NBA career, and taking out maybe the biggest consistent piece of what's been around him, his entire NBA entity, I think that's going to be really interesting. So those are the two guys I'm curious to see how it affects the most. But, you know, Bourne, in terms of what you think of the team this year, who do you think will be affected the most? What do you think it does to the group, not Evan Lowry?
Well, you know, the guy we're going to have on here in a little bit, Blake Murphy, wrote a really good article on this, that, like, one of the defining characteristics of Lowry's legacy is how much better he made everyone else. You know, like the ability to elevate the people around him. And so it's tough to know where that starts and what the value of that is. But there's no doubt that, you know, he made a lot of people a lot of money. He you know, one of the first things that Ibaka tweeted right after the deal was that, like, you know, he's making some money for some big men down in Miami. So he made a lot of people better, and a lot of people are going to have to show that they can do it without him. I don't think it's a guarantee that you're going to get everyone's best without him.
Well said. And yeah, we will ask Blake Murphy about that in just a couple of minutes' time. Also, Vivek Jacob, he'll join us on Sportsnet today a little later on. Of course, we'll dive back into the Jays. Drew Fairservice joins us after 1. Text line, open as always, 590-590. Please include your name and location. What's your favorite Lowry moment? What should the statue look like? Let us know. We'll dive back into the Raps with Blake Murphy when we continue here on Sportsnet today. Sportsnet today. Frank Gunning, Justin Bourne alongside me. We'll be with you from 12 to 2 most weekdays here during the month of August. Fired up to, as my good buddy Bourne says, talk some other sports. You know I'm going to drag you into hockey. I'm dying to have many Jack Eichel conversations with you. What do you think of his neck? What's his slap shot going to look like if he fuses his spine? I'm going to drag you deep into that hockey wormhole, but not today. Today is Kyle Lowry Day. Unfortunately, I wish it was a happy Kyle Lowry Day, but as you, I love your take. I love a zag, as we like to say, of this is the perfect way to end it. There's just no way it can ever end bad now. It ends happily, and we all get to move on. Talk to Blake Murphy in just a couple of moments' time here on Sportsnet today about that, of course. We want to hear from you on the text line, 590-590, include your name and location. I'm kind of focusing on Lowry's legacy. It's wherever you guys want to take it. Favorite moment, what should the statue look like? Maybe you're still upset about that trade deadline and getting a deal done or not getting a deal done. We want to hear from you all today on the text line. Bourne, it is going to be interesting what this team looks like without Lowry, not just in terms of the guys on the floor. We can kind of picture the starting lineup now, and we'll bring in Blake Murphy to talk about that. Blake Murphy covers the team for The Athletic. Very happy to have him on now. Blake, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. You know, my lovely co-host here has talked me out of my glum mood because Kyle Lowry's no longer a Raptor, telling me this is the perfect way. Now it can never, ever end badly as a Raptor for Kyle Lowry. Let's just start there and kind of land on his legacy, what he means to this franchise. It seems like we've been having these legacy conversations for about 18 months or so, going back to the bubble, and I don't know how much has changed, good or bad, for it. You know, for you, what does Kyle Lowry mean as a Raptor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's really any way around it at this point that he's the greatest Raptor of all time. You look at the longevity, the success, the ring, just how much he's meant to a fan base that, you know, really, like for a really long time, Vince Carter was obviously the most important Raptor ever, but I don't know that there was ever a player and a Raptor that kind of galvanized everyone around the team in the same way that Lowry and in earlier years DeRozan did, but, you know, Lowry kind of stood that test of time. So I think, you know, obviously not 9 seasons, a ring all over the record books. He's the greatest Raptor of all time, and that's where it starts. But I think he's going to have, you know, other elements to his legacy as well. I think, you know, the way that he impacted games in so many ways other than scoring is just something that, you know, he's one of those guys you really had to watch day to day to fully appreciate the whole Kyle Lowry experience. And I think that that's something that, you know, will kind of tie Raptors fans together for a long time. And I don't mean that in necessarily the defensive, like, hey, other teams on Twitter don't respect Kyle Lowry enough. There's just, you know, there's going to be a dozen or two dozen Lowry moments you can talk about with someone, you know, over a beer at a bar when you get to reminiscing about Lowry's Raptors tenure that, oh my God, that's so Kyle Lowry. And you know, we had Kalo Bingo at one point for all the little Lowryisms. And so I think a lot of that stuff's going to be ingrained in the Toronto basketball culture and in the Raptors culture really too, where, you know, Lowry went from this prickly guy early in his career who we didn't know how long he'd be here or where he'd be headed to, you know, they built that culture of winning and doggedness and you know, taking being underrated or slept on personal and using it as fuel. Like, all of that is built, yes, to some degree around DeRozan, but also Kyle Lowry. And Lowry being, you know, the level of player that he was, 6-time All-Star, very likely a Hall of Famer at this point, you know, that's what made it all work. So Lowry's super important on a lot of fronts. And you can pick, you know, 5, 6, 7 different ways to frame how much Lowry's meant to this team and this fan base. And you can't really go wrong. It's there's a lot of ways to appreciate Kyle Lowry.
Well, and one of them that you wrote about, hi Blake, by the way, great to talk to you.
Hey buddy.
Hi. One of the ways that you talked about it in your article in The Athletic today, which was wonderful, was about how Kyle Lowry made everyone better. Right, like directly made his teammates better. And you mentioned that it's tough to quantify sometimes how that works, you know, that sort of motivation or whatever. Is there any statistical backup or a way that you noticed directly that he was able to impact his teammates on the court that really validate that? Or is it really something that just gets lost to the ether that this guy was able to motivate teammates and make them better?
No, you can quantify it a little. You can quantify the impact, rather. I don't know that you can quantify, you know, hey, this guy got more confidence when Kyle Lowry was feeding him lobs. But you can quantify it a little bit. And there's a chart in that article that took every Raptor who played with Lowry over his tenure with the Raptors. And I kind of put their true shooting percentage and their net rating, which is their plus minus per 100 possessions, with Lowry on the court with them and without them. And there are some exceptions. There is the odd guy who, you know, there's a statistical anomaly or whatever. But that chart is remarkable, just how many guys Lowry's gotten the most out of. He's turned average shooters into good shooters into great shooters. The Raptors over Lowry's tenure were basically even plus minus, and this is including playoffs, even plus minus when Lowry wasn't on the floor, and this monstrous 6 points per 100 possessions, which is, you know, the play level of a second tier team when Lowry was on the court. So you have this, you know, it takes a little bit of sample size. It takes, you know, hey, does he just have a good chemistry with Biz, or can he do this with every center? Does he just have a good chemistry with Patrick Patterson, or can he do this with any stretch four? And then you kind of look at a 9-year sample, and it's like, oh, he did it with just about everyone, you know, at an individual efficiency level, at a driving team play level. And then we do have some advanced metrics that once the sample size gets large enough, you know, we can be pretty confident they're capturing Lowry's impact and not any of these kind of confounding factors. And we've got 9 years of Lowry as a Raptor where he's at the very, very top of the league in RAPM or RPM or Raptor or EPM or take your catch-all metric of choice. And if you use an 8, 5, 8, 9 year window, whatever you choose, Lowry's going to be right near the top, sometimes even in the top five league-wide. So, you know, it's a little harder to quantify night to night, unless it's like that 30-point comeback against the Mavericks where it's Kyle and the third stringers making the comeback. But big picture, we can look and say, you know, this isn't just a feeling, this isn't just a vibe. Kyle Lowry was the driving force and kind of the tide for the Raptors during this era.
You said we're all going to spend, you know, many years now reminiscing about our favorite Lowry moments, and I think you just hit the nail on the head for mine. I think it was December 22nd against the Mavs there, right before Christmas, and him leading the, you know, the largest comeback in team history. It was one of Boucher's first, you know, career highs that he has now eclipsed several times since. Boy, what a moment that was. And then also, you throwing out all those advanced metrics at me. Are you positive a few of those weren't cryptocurrencies? Are you trying to give out stock advice? That's normally more of a good show thing. We will allow it here if you do have any of that. In terms of the guys who are going to be hurt by Lowry's departure on this team, they're numerous. We just went over all of the ways. Is there anybody who is going to be helped a little bit, even if it's just somebody like Malachi Flynn saying, okay, there is now clearly more of a role for you here, or is it just simple enough to say there's not anyone on the team helped by Lowry leaving because of all he does that you just nailed it for us there?
Yeah, I mean, look, at some point they were going to have to transition some of those 35 minutes a game to the younger core of guys. And I think, you know, Flynn's probably the biggest short-term beneficiary in terms of minutes and what role he's going to play. And, you know, I think everyone remembers down the stretch once the Raptors started sitting Lowry out, Lowry is basically Malachi Flynn's personal coach on the sidelines for a lot of those games. And every time out, they'd be huddled up together. So, you know, I think that's something where here's where we get into some of the unquantifiable stuff is, you know, how much more ready is Malachi Flynn for that now, having spent a year under Lowry's mentorship and kind of having him by his side. And then I think the other interesting one is Fred VanVleet. And I think his job gets harder without Lowry. You know, he's probably not going to be splitting the point guard duties in the first unit anymore. He's going to have more responsibility with the ball in his hands. He maybe won't get as many shots off the ball from when Lowry's kind of on the ball. But this is now, I think, leadership-wise and spiritually, this is Fred VanVleet's team now. And I think Lowry's been helping prepare him for that. And obviously Siakam is, you know, paid like the number one and will probably get the number one spot in terms of touches. But this is VanVleet's team from a leadership perspective. And I think Lowry is, you know, VanVleet came into the league as a guy who right away we were all kind of like, oh, that's going to be – you know, that's going to be a guy who meshes well with Lowry and who Lowry will invest in. And I think he's probably now the most interesting Raptor this coming year to see just how much of that he's absorbed. And now that he's 27, you know, can he kind of continue on that leadership role at the point guard position for the franchise?
Blake, when I look at the Raptors lineup, I can't help but see a team that is like really well positioned if they just had a star player. Or just, you know, they just seem to be lacking that elite top end player that is so crucial to having success in the NBA. Is there a path forward where this can get back to being a championship team? You know, I give Ujiri a lot of credit for the way that he builds teams and the players that he finds and all that, but it just being in Toronto, obviously, it's not a destination. Is there a path forward down the way even that you can see this team getting back to the summit they reached a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I think there are two ways forward there. And, you know, we're still kind of figuring out as free agency plays out here which one the Raptors are kind of going down. And I think the first one is what we saw from kind of 2014 to 2018, and that's that staying pretty good keeps you in a really good position to get great if something materializes. And you can't bank on a Kawhi Leonard becoming available and you being the right trade fit for him. But you can look at some of what made that possible, and it's, hey, draft and develop well, keep your young players on, you know, maybe not the, you know, if you're looking at Gary Trent, $18 million a year is not the sharpest of deals, but it's also a 22-year-old shooter on a tradable contract. You know, make some decisions like that, and then if something materializes, you're in a good position to strike assets-wise. The other, and this is probably a longer-term thing, and I'm not, you know, I'm certainly not as down on Pascal Siakam as some fans seem to be, but I do think if you look at Trent and Anobi Flynn, Scottie Barnes as kind of the younger side of the core, all guys that are 23 and younger, whereas Van Vliet and Siakam are kind of in their peak phase, you know, maybe the second path is still the same thing. Hey, stay really good and keep yourself in a position to be great. But you kick the can down the line just a little bit and, you know, look, if you're being realistic, you know, there's probably not anything resembling a championship window this year. Right. It's hard to see how that opens up. Obviously, things change quickly, but they don't project as a heavy cap space team next summer. So maybe you look at that and you get realistic about the timeline and where you're at. And, you know, maybe those Siakam rumors from earlier in the offseason, which I think were a lot of, you know, other teams being predatory and trying to kick the tires and see what shakes loose on him. You know, maybe those get explored more earnestly as Siakam approaches 28 and some of your 22 and 23-year-olds are starting to break out. So I think those are kind of the two paths, and they're not dissimilar. They're just on different timelines. Neither's a sure thing, but I don't think this front office, and they haven't over the course of their time other than the last 2 months of this past season, I don't know that there's an appetite for the go all the way to a full teardown. And I don't know that, you know, I don't know that they could bottom out quickly enough to do it this year anyway.
Yeah, that's well said. Talking to Blake Murphy here on Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Justin Bourne alongside me. You mentioned the new deal for Gary Trent Jr. there, knowing what we know now with Norm Powell effectively getting the 2 or 3 year longer, depending on how you want to look at it, at the same money in Portland. Did the Raps make the right call making that move to move Powell out at the deadline when they're effectively paying Trent Jr. the same amount of money just on a shorter term deal?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends which of those two paths we just talked about you prefer, really, right? Like, if your goal is to get right back to it this coming season and maximize your ability to win this coming year, then Norm Powell at $18 million is going to look a lot better in the short term than Gary Trent is. You know, if you're taking a longer-term outlook, I think what they're looking at is Trent is 5.5 years younger, which means, you know, you're probably overpaying – not probably, you're overpaying right now – but you're overpaying a guy who's still in kind of his pre-peak phase, or at worst, early peak phase if you're looking at a developmental curve, whereas Norman Powell will be into his early 30s at the back end of this deal. And then I think the other thing is, you know, the player option is pretty friendly to Gary Trent, but Norman Powell got 5 years of guarantee where downside is Trent got 3. So I think the Raptors would probably still tell you the shift on the age and development curve, as well as the ability to stay a little leaner by not giving a fourth and fifth year, those would be what they tell you, I think, is still, hey, we're comfortable with the Trent side of things. You know, it was always kind of predictable that Trent would get a good deal. The Raptors have always paid well to re-sign their guys, and they've been pretty friendly giving out player options. So that's not a huge surprise. The thing with Trent, too, is and this might not matter now, depending on what the specifics of the Lowry sign and trade are, but, and this is maybe getting in the weeds a little too much, but Trent had a really small cap hold as well. So the Raptors could have, or could still get a lot of extra flexibility out of him versus Norman Powell as a free agent. It might play out that that doesn't matter at all. But it was part of their thinking as well.
No, the cap hold is a good thing to point out there. The player option is just what frustrates me so much, because it seems to me like if he doesn't live up to the deal, he will 1,000,000% lock in for that third year. And if he develops the way you would like and exceeds it, he will almost certainly be opting out. It just seems like a complete kind of lose-lose for the Raptors when you're already paying him a pretty high clip to retain his rights.
Yeah, my guess would be, you know, and I don't know that I'd frame it as a lose-lose so much as just there's no chance for you to get surplus value from that deal, right? Like Gary Trent is not delivering more than $54 million of value over these 3 years, and if he does, he's opting out. But I think what probably, and this is not me reporting, this is me just reading the tea leaves, I'd imagine Trent's camp wanted 4 years guaranteed, and to avoid going 4 years at a price point similar to that, the player option was the cost of that. So, you know, you get a little flexibility back team side by, you know, limiting your long-term commitment and still retaining his bird rights if he opts out down the line. But there's a cost to doing that, and the cost of doing that is either up the annual value or concede on that player option. So that would be my guess as to how that got negotiated.
Thanks for that, Blake. Really, really appreciate the time. Always love hearing from you.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks,
there goes Blake.
Blake
Murphy from The Athletic. The guy, some guys in the States, Dan Le Batard Show, they do a segment just called Reckless Speculation. We needed it at the end. I feel like all of our reporter guys, Elliot is the one, Frege, the one I most think of this, where they are trying to stress so strongly. This is just a thought that popped into my brain. I have not reached out. I am not reporting this. I feel so bad for guys like Blake and Frege and all other insiders, because, I mean, I guess you're a little closer to that world than I am, Bourne. But, like, I could just pop off with an opinion, say, hey, what about this? Would this make sense? No one would ever think I'm reporting anything. Those guys, they got to be a little careful.
I'm probably one of the guys that a lot of people think that I'm maybe more connected than I am, which probably works in my favor. But, like, you know, I know some guys, but, like, I don't send I text Sheldon Keefe and Kyle Dubas once in a while on this machine I'm holding in my hands, but it's like, how's your kid? I'm never like, are you going to take this guy off the power play? And they're not, no one's responding to me with real information. So, yes, I know people, but I don't hit them up for reporting information.
There we go. And that's why we could be just we're allowed to throw out opinions. Guys like Blake, they have to couch it a little more. Always love hearing from Blake. And again, we'll dive back into the Raptors. Vivek Jacob will join us. CBC Sports, Complex Canada, going to dive into the Jays as well. Drew Fair Service of the Spin Rate Pod, he'll join us. Also, your text, 590-590, include your name and location. Want to know favorite Lowry memory? What do you make of his legacy? What should the statue look like? Any and all Kyle Lowry thoughts are appreciated. Our producer, Sam McKee, will read some of those when we continue on Sportsnet today. Brent Gunning and Justin Bourne, Sportsnet today. Our wonderful producer, Sam McKee, waiting in the wings. Technical producer, Derek Brendale, making sure we sound, well, as good as we can. I mean, he really has no control over that. He controls how strong the sound is. In terms of whether you like the sound of my voice, he can do nothing about that. So send all complaints about that directly to me at Gunning590. Justin Bourne will be here 12 to 2 for the month of August. We've been asking for your text, 590-590. Please include your name and location. Hit us up on the text line. Any and all Kyle Lowry thoughts, favorite memory, should he have a statue? Things of that nature. There's a lot of Lowry thoughts in the city today. Sam McKee has been collecting them for us on the text line. McKee, what do we got, buddy?
Yeah, I'm just cultivating texts, you know, farming them. So this one I don't remember, but maybe I'm just non-observant. But one of my favorite Kyle Lowry memories is that during the championship run, at the end of every series, he managed to get the ball and keep it. I still wonder what he's done with them. Thanks, Andrew in Mississauga. Do you remember that? Was that a thing during the run?
I vaguely remember it. I don't think it was Chris Pronger level, give me the puck, I need
that's the first
the
thing
puck.
I think of.
That immediately where, look, where I'm born. I told you we'd drag you back into hockey.
Yeah.
Kyle Lowry immediately goes to Chris Pronger. I vaguely remember this, him chasing the ball, wanting to have the game ball. Trying to think. So he obviously has one of those. Of course, he kept one for himself. You imagine Kawhi got one as well. Masai, a third, and Nurse. Is that like just too straightforward, too simple? Four series wins, four game balls? I don't know.
Yeah, you know what's wild to me is, like, in the NBA, like, the guy, the MVP, usually the series MVP, will just, like, have the trophy, the Larry O.B., and he just has it. Like, no one else gets to have it. There's no sharing of it. Like, just like Giannis has it for, like, a week, no one else gets to touch it. It's so it's unique. It's so clear who the best player is, and everyone's like, it's for this guy. He's the guy.
That's what.
Well, and also, and again, to bring it back to hockey, because we are who we are, it's like the Conn Smythe trophy is, like, a dirty thing. It's like, I'll touch it, I'll look at it, and then we'll set it aside because we're partying with my real love, the Stanley Cup, tonight. When you have the NBA MVP trophy, you have them both there. It is just such a great image.
Every
picture. Got the Larry O.B. and the little one right next to him. Oh, so good.
Yeah, and one of my favorite rites of passage is every time a non-NHL team wins a championship is when all the hockey people are like, oh, how can the owner get the trophy first? Oh, ma. And then it's like literally 2 seconds later, the players have it and no one cares. It's just that little 2-minute snippet at the end of every other championship in sports other than hockey is one of my favorite times of the year. So there you go. I just want to get that in there quickly. Do you guys care?
It's pretty gross. It's gross.
You care? You care?
I don't care. I genuinely don't like think it should be different. But if I were the owner, I would be embarrassed. Like, I don't roll out there because you spent all the money. Like, I get it first. To me, it would just be like, have some, I don't know, some awareness of what just happened.
See, I wonder is, what is quicker? Is it the hockey guy pointing that out, or is it the hockey guy bringing up Rich Peverly or Gregory Campbell's name whenever anyone is hurt in any other sport? Rich Peverly died and wanted to get back out there. I don't know what happens quicker, the trophy thing or that. Whenever hockey guys wade into the NBA.
It's right, at McKee. Least 4% racist, probably
94%.
Yeah,
probably more.
Yeah, there's no doubt. All right. One of my favorite that's the one I just read. I have it here. The Kyle Lowry statue should be absolutely Kyle standing straight up, hands behind his back, ready to take a charge from an unnamed opponent with his head down, and Lowry staring straight at him. Matt in Toronto. Love that idea.
So I think if there is, I don't think it will be him taking the charge. I know that that's the most quintessential Kyle Lowry thing, but I don't think it will be that. If you're going to go with the charge, I don't think there should be another player in there. It's like
just the guy giving him a knee in the groin on the way up.
Let's not have that for the greatest moment. I mean, I know that's what he did, and I know that's what we love him for. But I bet you he would rather, you know, him hitting a three, him holding the Larry O.B., something other than him catching a knee to the chin.
Yeah, him holding a trophy is a good idea. I would go to Lowry first because, to me, it should be the charge thing. That's the absolute right call, but you totally need his approval that that's how he wants to be perceived. He's okay with that because otherwise not cool. Because, like, what else is it? Him just, like, you know, a jump shot? Like, I don't know. Like, how do you – I like – that's what's iconic about him taking the charge, so I like that.
And the weird thing about the trophy is when we all think of him with the trophy, we think, at least I do, I think of him at the parade with the trophy. But what complicates that is he's wearing a Damon Stoudemire jersey. So if you make it authentic to the moment, there will be kids 50 years from now saying, I thought this was a Kyle Lowry statue. Who is Stoudemire and why
Rappers
does he have a jersey
Damon
that he never
Stoudemire.
Wore there? That's the only problem.
All right. So this one is no name, but shame on you, but it's this is on all caps, so I assume he's yelling. I won't yell, so just pretend I'm yelling. Respect with a fist pump emoji. Wish him all the best. Now get rid of all the others and do a complete rebuild. Bring Lowry back when he retires. Head off his job anywhere. So first, your thoughts on a complete rebuild. I don't know if that's the move to do right now. They're already young enough.
If you're going to do a complete rebuild, you should have done it at the deadline last year, and Kyle Lowry should have been out the door, and you should have looked at trading not for Gary Trent Jr., who you have to pay, but for big-time futures down the road. So I don't think there's a teardown. I think there's too much to tear down here. Pascal Siakam, good player. That's a problem. Like, there is too much good to tear it down that quickly to be bad.
No, I 100% agree. It's like a teardown is easy when you're a bad team with a couple of star players. You know, when you're a well-rounded roster with lots of quality work ethic, sort of prime age guys, it's not easy to tear that down. You're too good to go in that direction. I really like Blake's point about just kind of staying relevant, staying good, and waiting for opportunities to come because, you know, obviously free agency is not we're not the Lakers here in Toronto. People aren't flocking here, but there's ways to get them otherwise.
Well, yeah. the other problem too about like selling off all of the pieces is outside of Fred, I don't know if there's anybody that really gets you a plus level asset. It seems like you're gaining a ton of 27th overall picks and fringy, you know, G League, maybe NBA guys. Maybe if you had the piece, maybe if Siakam's value was what it was off of the title, off of the all NBA season, and you could actually get a haul. But even if you tear it down, all the work you'd have to do it, you're doing it to get no real assets. You'd look around and you'd say there's nothing to build on going forward from the teardown. So that's why you don't do it.
Yeah, and Borny, when you're talking about what Blake said about being relevant or whatever, you know how many fan bases across the NBA would have just killed, even before the Raptors won the championship, but the relevance of the Toronto Raptors for those, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, however long DeMar and Kyle were kind of at the peak of their powers, like, they, you know, like I said, they lost to LeBron, but they were in the conference final every year, or were fighting to get to the conference final outside of that 1 year they got swept by the Wizards. Like, they were a contending team every year if it wasn't for LeBron. So I agree with Blake on that one.
I want to read my favorite tweet from yesterday in response to Gunner talking about the 27th overall pick. Was this is the time of year when everyone's like, I can't believe X team gave up a first round pick, and then the draft rolls around and it's 27th overall and turns out to be a guy named Bogonis Bogosius who's fighting in the Lithuanian army until 2025.
sounds like a cousin of Bunks. I'd be careful, you know, talking ill of
it's
him.
So true.
His show.
It's so true, man.
The late round first rounder, don't need him.
All right, this is a hot take to take us into break, so I'm going to read this one. There cannot be a statue of Kyle before Vince. I'm a lifelong Torontonian, and Vince is the most influential athlete to ever come to this town. Without VC, there is no Kyle. He was a godsend for us non-hockey fans in Toronto. Eddie from Toronto. How's that for a take?
I wholly understand what Eddie is getting at. If he's wrong, but if you were somebody who has been sitting there fingers in your ears, no, I don't want to hear it. I cannot take the Leafs being the only thing that ever gets talked about in this market in the winter, 24/7, 365. I can only imagine what Vince Carter felt like to you as a breath of fresh air. But unfortunately, and we have all kind of, to varying degrees, made our peace with the way it ended here. Some people are all the way back on board, retire the number. Some people are, okay, there's not that much animosity. Now, but it cannot, the way it ended, cannot get a statue, cannot have a statue for that guy. It can't happen.
And if it can, maybe we just need some more time. Lowry can certainly go first. A title does it. That's good enough for me.
Vince Carter obviously scorned me, but he was right there with Matt throughout that whole thing, like how much I loved him. And it was a tough pill to swallow, but I'm coming around. I'm the coming around guy. I really am. I hate to admit it to the audience listening right now, but I am coming around on Vince.
Attaway, Sammy.
I'm almost there. He let me tell you, when I see that Kyle Lowry statue, I'll say he looks lonely and needs a little company, and then
we can talk
about a Vince one. Justin Bourne, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet today. Keep your texts coming, 590-590. Want to read more of those before we're done today. Going to dive back into the wraps next hour, but coming up next, a little Blue Jays talk. Drew Fairservice joins us next on Sportsnet today. Brent Gunning, Justin Bourne, first hour of our journey together flew by quickly. It's like a road trip, you know, you hit the open road and you don't know how it's going to go. Is it going to be a little awkward in the car? Do we like each other's music? And so far, I think we're doing good. Or at least I'm going to speak for both of us so that there isn't a swift rejection coming right back to me. I know there will be no rejection from our next guest, especially towards you, your buddy, my colleague. We've talked on the radio before. That's close enough to colleagues. Drew Fairservice, Spin Rate Podcast. Drew, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
So the last time you and I spoke, it was before the deadline, and what are they going to do? Will it be Joey Gallo? And no, it wasn't Joey Gallo, but it was another very important piece to this team. Jose Berríos is the guy getting landed. I know it's been a few days now since it, but if I could just get your reaction to the deadline and how it sets the Jays up going forward into this playoff push.
I think it's the perfect move for this team outside of Joey Gallo, as you and I, I'm sure, discussed at length. But Jose Berríos just gives them exactly what they need, which is stability in the rotation, not only for this year, but for next year as well. It gives them options for this year as they can move guys around in terms of who's going to be, you know, the kind of fifth starter. If they're going to go with six starters, we know that Hyunjin Ryu likes to get an extra day of rest most of the time. So it gives them just more options in terms of who's pitching well. And if someone, if it's Steven Matz or Ross Stripling, who maybe isn't a good matchup for a lineup, or maybe isn't kind of had a bit of a rough go, they can move those guys out. But the most important thing is just what Berríos offers, which is kind of like a souped up version of what Alek Manoah offers. They're pretty similar guys in terms of being sinker slider, with Berríos obviously being much more established and having a terrific track record. And we saw him pitch very well Sunday against Kansas City. And I just really think that hopefully that's what Blue Jays fans can come to expect when he takes the mound.
Hi, Drew. Fun to get to talk to you. It's been some time. I wanted to, you know, I think back to our days working together at the Score, and one of my favorite things was everyone just being wildly cynical about everyone all the time. It genuinely was a most fun part, I think, of looking at sports teams.
I would have fit in perfectly, it sounds like.
Yeah, but I don't see that cynicism about this Jays front office, and I'm obviously coming from the position of a very generalist here, but I want to know about this front office and how fans feel about them, you feel about them, and the progress that they've made in working towards a championship team here in Toronto.
I think that you can see the strengths and the weaknesses of the front office on the field today. And I think that the strengths are definitely outweigh the weaknesses. And you don't even have to look at the Blue Jays to see that. You can look at a team like the Texas Rangers or even the Kansas City Royals, who, of course, the Blue Jays played in the playoffs in 2015, or Cleveland, who the Jays faced in 2016, where the Jays are already geared back up for another run at the playoffs. They have, you know, franchise-type pieces. Obviously, not everybody gets to have a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or even a Bo Bichette, but having those pieces in place really shows that the Blue Jays mean business, and they've already turned things around. After, you know, they hit their lull, they lost 95 games in 2019, which was not to say part of the plan, but they didn't expect that to be a contending team. And now here we are in 2021. They've spent money. And then the biggest thing I think the Berríos trade shows is that they're willing to move away from some of their prospects. They don't, and to use a kind of inside, you know, online baseball term, they're not prospect hugging like they once were. They've built up a lot of system depth such that they're able to move away from a guy like Austin Martin, who has a bright future as a professional baseball player, let there be no doubt. But when some of the maybe warts are exposed, as he's making his first trip through AA, are the questions about his defensive position, are the questions about the power that he might be able to generate at the plate, they don't have to hang on to that guy just because he was a top, you know, five draft pick, just because they spent a bunch of money on him. They've got other people who can do his job down the road, but the most important thing, and the thing that they value more than what 6 or 7 years of Austin Martin might look like, is they value making the team on the field right now better, which, you know, you can't really ask for too much more. Maybe the Blue Jays could have done a few more moves. I think with the prospect depth they have, they could have, in a perfect world, acquired both Joey Gallo and Jose Berríos, but they didn't, and that's okay. They are doing things to make this year's team better without sacrificing the quality of next year's team, but also not just continuing to kick the can down the road, which is a criticism of a lot of front offices, the one in Cleveland in particular, where they just don't have the money, aren't willing to spend the money. You can't accuse the Blue Jays of not spending money. George Springer makes a whole big pile of it. So does Hyunjin Ryu. Those players could have chosen to go anywhere, but the Blue Jays made them the best offer, and they accepted it. So those guys are in the lineup, making an impact, and now the team is not only has the luxury, but the choice to move on from prospects just because they need to make the team better now. And that's a pretty good place to be, quite honest.
Yeah, it's a great place to be. You mentioned prospect hugging. I think people thought there was a lot more than hugging going on with the Jays front office and the prospects. Boy, they loved them for a while there. And I think the Martin thing is really encouraging to see. Now, I think there's some questions about how much were they really pushing all in versus how much was Martin's development pushing them to a place where, ooh, we better use this asset before the bloom starts to come off of it. I know on deadline day, there was a lot of talk. The Berríos move got done relatively early. Oh, maybe they'll try to do something else to add to, you know, the 2 months plus a year that you have. Are you surprised that they didn't kick tires on a, you know, Gallo was already moved at that time, but be it a Trevor Story or something, or someone like that?
I don't think really Trevor Story fits with their timeline. And again, if you just look at him on, in terms of what position does he play, what upgrade does he bring, that cost is probably going to be much more considerable than the upgrade that he offers. And I think that the problem, the thing with prospect capital, which is maybe how you want, I mean, they're people, right? These are young men trying to make their way in baseball. So they're people. But when you look at them as a collective, as an organization, once you've got that prospect capital, you build it up to fill out your big league roster, as the Blue Jays have done, but also you do it to supplement your big league roster. But once you've got it, you can only spend it once, right? You can't trade another, a player like Austin Martin, who is a 55 or 50 future value player, which is an above average big leaguer. That's going to help scouts view him. That's a lot. That's a big chunk of value that you can only spend once. And the Blue Jays spent it. They traded him. They exchanged his services for Jose Berríos. But when you think about the offseason, there's always lots of really intriguing opportunities that maybe aren't there in season when teams want to move big contracts off their books or, you know, good successful players. You know, I'll use an example like Nolan Arenado, where the Blue Jays weren't going to go crazy at this trade deadline. They wanted to make the 2021 team better. They did in small ways and in big ways. They wanted to make the 22 team better. They did that as well. And they're still in a position to, A, graduate some of those prospects into some of the spots on the roster that will become vacant over this coming offseason. But also, they're in a position to make another move like that if they want to, when maybe all the teams are at the table, as opposed to the kind of buyer-seller dichotomy that we see typically at the July deadline. So they're in a good place. They didn't blow their brains out. They can still make a lot of good, popular, and forward moves this coming offseason, while also keeping the focus where it belongs, which is on the field between now and October.
Drew, and a lot of fans were promised the young core coming. You know, it was obviously Bichette and Guerrero, and one of them was Kevin Biggio, who seems to be finding his way, not on the outs with the Jays, but things aren't going awesome right now. What do you make of where his progress is at and what his future looks like with the Jays?
Well, Kevin Biggio kind of got lumped in with Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. because he is similar in that he has a famous father. Similar in that they kind of made their progress together, which is unfair to Kevin Biggio. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is as good a prospect as any team will ever have. Like, those guys, we use the term generational talent for a reason. They come along once every 20 years. Bo Bichette, not quite the same kind of prospect as Vlad, not going to be the same kind of player now or in the future that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is, but still like an exceptionally talented player and one that has grown into his role as an all-star in the big leagues. Kevin Biggio was never going to be that. He's a limited guy in terms of the things that he can do. He has things that he does terrifically. He has a lot of value. He does so many things on the diamond that are important, but he has his shortcomings, and they've been exposed recently. And the power of a guy like Biggio, which is his patience. He's really, he does two things. He plays a lot of positions and he draws a lot of walks. But now here we are 100 games into the season. He's been around the league in a row, which I think the kind of, you know, 2020 is I wouldn't say throwaway, but it's just such an odd chunk of time. But here we are 100 consecutive games. People are getting a look at him. Advanced scouts are all seeing him. They're making adjustments. And now we're seeing teams be a little bit more aggressive with him. He's getting a lot fewer pitches thrown outside of the plate or outside of the zone, which is, he's really good at deciding what's a strike and what's not. But as teams are being more aggressive, his lack of ability to hit the ball over the fence, to really hit the ball with a lot of authority. If you look at some of his advanced, like StatCast numbers, really, you know, in the bottom third or the bottom 10% of the league in terms of expected batting average, you know, expected stats that go off of how hard he hits the baseball. So it's not that he's a bad player. He could be a key contributor on a good team like the 2021 Blue Jays, but cast as he was earlier this season as the everyday third baseman, I don't think it's a great spot for him. As a guy who can step in like he did on Monday and play second base in a pinch, play right field in a pinch, he played first base the other day as well. There's a lot of value in that. A guy who could hit the bottom of your order, draw a walk, go in there against a pitcher who might be struggling with their command and dare them to throw in three strikes in a row. And then if they don't, he's on first base, but then he becomes a terrific base runner. That's a valuable player. Not an everyday player, not a franchise cornerstone, but a guy that can help a good team. So hopefully there is that opportunity for him to be that. But at the same time, if you're trying to win in 2021 and 2022, You need to upgrade with an everyday player and then let Tatum Biggio demonstrate his strengths when the opportunities are shown, because that's when he, that's when you put him in that position to succeed, where as an everyday player, I just don't think that that's who he is.
Talking to Drew Fairservice here on Sportsnet today, Brent Gunning, Justin Bourne. You mentioned the famous fathers thing, and I think the other thing that really hurt Biggio when he came up is when a guy doesn't have a position, the only place we ever seemingly go is Ben Zobrist. Hey, he can be there, Ben Zobrist. And that guy's a really important player on a World Series championship team. It just feels like he kind of got pigeonholed into a role that was always going to be tough for him to kind of live up to. And yeah, the famous fathers is the first thing we, or the first place we go with that. And it, looking at the outfield, you know, Biggio's found himself out there, but Grichuk has certainly had a nice year. It seems to me like he is just so perfectly positioned on this team to be the guy he is. He's so toolsy, but he's also so streaky. You know, we saw him throw a guy out last night. He made a great diving catch. And then if the bat's there, obviously he can be a force in this lineup. But just with how much else there is in the lineup, it feels like they don't need him to be that. I guess what I'm saying is it feels to me like he is the kind of perfect third outfielder for this Jays team.
I would more say that he's the perfect fourth outfielder for this Blue Jays team.
I had third slash fourth written, and I didn't know if I was downgrading him unfairly. So I'm happy you said that.
Look, the things that Randall Grichuk does well are evident. He is a very strong, maybe adequate seems like damning with faint praise, but he can play right field very well. He can play center field fine. He's a great guy to plug in center field when George Springer needs a day to get him off the turf or whatever. And in right field, he's fine. The problem is at the plate, he is this year on balance who he's always been. He doesn't get on base a lot. He doesn't walk, which isn't the end of the, and, you know, the be all and end all. Bobichet doesn't walk, but Bobichet can hit everything and hit it hard and hit it to all fields. Randall Grichuk gets exposed. His on base is, I think, in like the 285, 290 kind of range right now. He's got power. You know, he's a guy that can hit you 20, 25 home runs, but that's kind of all he offers. And the problem, you know, that I see is when you look at the Blue Jays lineup, once you get past, you know, the Vlad and the Bo and, you know, Marcus Semien and even Teoscar Hernandez, then you start to get a bunch of guys who are just like Randall Grichuk. You got right-handed Randall Grichuk. You get right-handed Luis Gurriel Jr. You even get right-handed Santiago Espinal, right-handed Alejandro Kirk. Other than Kirk, those guys are all going to be exposed against high velocity and, like, big sliders, tough off-speed stuff. So when you have all those guys in a row, it makes it really tough in those late-game situations, where I think that's what Corey Dickerson really has an opportunity to step in and be a similar version of Randall Grichuk, except a guy who has a way higher ceiling, a way higher floor at the plate, I think, in terms of being a more consistent guy who can get on base and is also a very competent outfielder. So the ability for Corey Dickerson to step in, do a lot of those same things, offer a different look in the batting order, as well as offer even that little extra bit of offense. Then you have Grichuk being able to sub in defensively as required, but also if you want to split time between he and Gurriel, if you need to put Teoscar Hernandez, give him a day at DH, whatever it might be. As a fourth outfielder, Randall Grichuk is great. As a third outfielder, I think he's kind of reached the end of his. I mean, he can be a good outfielder on a bad team, but the Blue Jays in 2021 are trying to be a good team. So you need to find someone who can do a little bit more than what we've seen Grichuk offer in 2021.
So that brings me to my question about the Blue Jays trying to be a good team. Like, if we scrap the first half records and look at the rosters in the AL East at this point, where do you have the Blue Jays sort of penciled in the pecking order? What are their chances? How high should my hopes be, I guess I'm asking, Drew?
Look, your hopes can be pretty high. The Blue Jays are talented. They score runs like nobody else. They have a vastly improved pitching staff now. You know, there's still, it's still a bullpen full of relievers, so there's obviously opportunities for it to, games to go sideways, for them to kind of run out of guys. Brad Hand didn't have a great day yesterday. It's always tough to evaluate how guys are pitching in the weird extra innings, you know, situation that we're still living in. But you can just look, even if you just take away the records and you look at how many runs the Blue Jays score versus how many runs they allow, you look at what's going on with the Red Sox, where the Red Sox offense has definitely come down to earth. Their kind of lack of pitching depth is being exposed. They do will get Chris Sale back, but like he's coming back off of Tommy John. So I think you can safely slot the Blue Jays ahead of the Red Sox for the rest of the season. I think you can look at the Yankees. They made a ton of moves, but they still have a lot of warts on them as well. There's still a lot of questions about their pitching depth and even, you know, what the bottom half of their order is going to look like. I'm not worried about the Yankees scoring runs. They kind of underperformed in the first half. Now they've added Gallo. They added Anthony Rizzo. The Ragazzi are going to have a great second half. They're going to score a lot of runs. But, and then the Rays are the Rays. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine. The Rays have a lot of bad players, but they have a good team. So, I mean, I'm almost done trying to figure it out. The Rays, they don't allow any runs. They're pitching. Their defense is so good. So when the Blue Jays are right, but it's like the Rays, your only recourse is to hit the ball over the fence. So that's what the Blue Jays need to do to beat the Rays. But, you know, I think they need to have a good record against these good teams. They get to play Oakland again. They get to play Seattle. They got a bunch of games still against those AL East rivals. So if things are lined up for the Blue Jays to still be able to make a good run, they could be better positioned, but they could be a lot worse positioned in terms of 21, and then also just thinking ahead to 2022 when they're going to be a force. But I think you can at least, if nothing else, look forward to some pretty tense games in September as the Blue Jays scramble and try to stay involved in the AL wild card race.
Oh, you almost said meaningful September baseball, and those are basically magic words around here. That's what we've been pining for so long, heading into that playoff run, and then we finally got it. Drew, thanks so much. Thoroughly enjoyed the chat. Thanks for taking the time.
Gentlemen, it's my pleasure, and Justin, it's so nice to speak with you again. It's been far too long. Yeah, you still have my number. Don't be afraid to use it when you got it.
I know, buddy. I know. Thanks for coming on today. Good to hear your sweet voice.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
He dropped it an octave or two at the end there. You buttered him up nicely. I didn't even let you two gush about your newfound baseball love, Shohei Ohtani. I know if we say that name, I think three times, producer Sam McKee crashes on the air to tell us that nobody cares. I think that's what would happen. But I was surprised. I thought for sure we were gonna end up on Shohei at some point in time. I believe he even tweeted about it before he came on.
I dropped the ball. I should have gone there. I need someone to talk Shohei to me. I actually haven't followed how things have gone in the last like 3 weeks, and I'm terrified to weigh in on it because I know McKee's got his, like, you know, every stat at the ready to show me why Vladdy's better.
Yeah, I can tell you what stat he would use to do that, and it would be games out of a playoff spot for the Oakland Athletics, the Angels there. That's what he would be doing. This is what happens when you Google standings as you try to talk about another team, and then Oakland pops up on your Google search bar. That's what happened there. Yeah, Jays are going to be fun. There's going to be a lot to talk about with them. I think the biggest, most interesting question is going to be, And again, obviously, health will dictate this, performance will dictate this, but it's how you kind of set up the rotation. Obviously, they're most certainly going to have to go through a wild card round. They are going to have to pitch well deep into the season. So this isn't a scenario where they're going to be able to set their rotation 1-4 for a playoff series. But that's the thing I'm kind of most seeing is obviously you want this team to do well. They need to win games to get in a playoff position. But it's the internal competition for pecking order. Who's your number one starter? How do you kind of grade the guys out after that? That to me is maybe the most interesting question with this team now.
Yeah, and can we get McKee? McKee, are you readily available to give us your Blue Jays takes right now? What's on your mind for the Blue Jays? What do you got?
Am I here?
You're here. You're in.
Hey, now. Good thing I didn't swear about the guests. I didn't know it was on. yeah.
We'd love all of our guests on Sportsnet today. Sam McKee, who produces the show, would never talk ill about them. Well, you know.
Vladimir Guerrero is the MVP so far and away. It's not even close. Like, I just couldn't care less. Yeah, you know why you haven't paid attention to Ohtani in the last 3 weeks? Because it's not relevant to anything that matters in baseball. So there's my first take. Secondly, I want to be excited about this Blue Jays team. I am very excited. I'm going to the Blue Jays game tonight. I'm going to the Blue Jays game tomorrow night. And I'm going to the Blue Jays game Friday night. So I am very excited about this Blue Jays team. I love the Toronto Blue Jays. I love the way they look. But I'm just looking at these standings, and it is going to be such a grind, boys, for them to get in there. Like, you know, there's just so many teams around them. Like, I can look at the division, and something can get squirrely. They can go on a 8 or 9 game winning streak, maybe win a few against Boston, try to get themselves back into it, sweep them this weekend. But it is the wild card we're talking about here. Yeah. And sure, I know Seattle stinks. They got a minus 50 run differential, but the Yankees don't stink. The Oakland A's don't stink. You know, like, those teams are going to be battling with the whole way through, and you got to win your head-to-head games. I don't know. I just feel like it's going to be a tall task, and they buried themselves with that bullpen. They had that stretch there where the bullpen cost them. Like, if they win 5 or 6 of those games that they blew, you know, or
no,
4 of
those
games.
You don't get to do that.
Blew.
Hold on. You don't get to go if they won 5 or 6 more. That's a ton of games.
No, it's. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like they in terms of lot, I saw a stat in the AL East. I don't have the updated stat of it, but I saw it a couple days with the amount of games blown slash come back in, and they were just like dead last in the division in terms of games. So their late inning hitting needs to be better, and their bullpen is certainly better now than it was during that stretch there. But sure, give me 3 wins during that stretch that they blew. How's that sound? Is that okay for you there, Czar Borny? Is that okay?
Well, listen, it reminded me of my boy Matty Marchese's take about Louis Oosthuizen, who just needed to play a little better in a few majors, and he would have won 4 more. 4 more! That's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, guys, we can do this take with me. Imagine if I just applied myself a little bit in university. I'd have a real job right now, and I wouldn't be doing this. Like, just if I only did this thing earlier on in my life, that would have changed my whole trajectory. That really is the Jays bullpen. McKee, I just thought you would like to know before we step aside and get back to wraps. 37 homers for Shohei Ohtani, leading the major leagues, 3 ahead of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I just thought you would like to know that.
Face of the league.
Don't care. Guess what? I watch Toronto Blue Jays every night, and Vladdy carries the Jays. What's his OPS? Does Vladdy have the best OPS in the league?
There's no doubt he doesn't.
The live Google.
Ding dong, ding dong, ding. He definitely does.
Yeah, he is. But you know who's second? Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah. Second place in the best stat. So therefore, he can be the second runner-up for MVP. Yeah, I don't care.
Can we please clip this? Can we mark it down that?
How
today,
have we gotten back to this? How is this
today? Well, because we have to torture you. It's what we have to do. Today, that's the best stat, and then inevitably, when it flips and Vladdy Jr.'s leading the league in bombs, we know that chicks dig the long ball, and that's what McKee will be yelling at us when Vladdy Jr. is on top in that stat, because it's whatever Vladdy is the best, right? Right, McKee?
Completely agree. Excellent take by you, Cunning. Yes, Vladdy is the best player in the league, and therefore should be the American League MVP. The most valuable player in the league, you might even say.
I don't own a sports jersey with someone else's name on it that I would like. But Vladdy is. I think I got to do the Vladdy thing.
I bought a Ryu T-shirt jersey. I'm past the days of buying a jersey. I think it's just too much. Like a blank jersey or a T-shirt jersey if you're going to get a player, and I have a Ryu jersey, T-shirt jerseys. There you go.
There you go. Sports fashion, and not even sports fashion, just T-shirts. Sam
McKee
has brought throughout the years. This will maybe in a recurring segment. No, I'm being buzzed in my ear. This will not be a recurring segment. We will not do this again. What we will do is talk about Kyle Lowry, what the Raptors are going to look like without him. I'm getting a segment name. We would call it Jersey Shore is what I'm being told. We'd have waves crashing in the background. All right, it's sounding worse, actually, now that I dive back into it. The Raptors, likely worse next year without Kyle Lowry. See exactly how big that step back they take is, who can be helped, if anybody can be helped, by losing Kyle Lowry. I think not that many people. Vivek Jacob, he will join us next. Complex Canada, CBC Sports, about a half hour left here in Sportsnet today. But not Kyle Lowry. He costs a lot of money for the Miami Heat. Kyle Lowry era in Toronto coming to a close. We're still waiting on the specifics of a sign and trade. Will Goran Dragic be involved? Precious, is he in play? Second round picks, other things that are supposed to get us excited. Oh man, NBA contracts. They never stop being weird to me. Love talking about the league. I wish the contracts made just a little bit more sense. Seeing Norm Powell get $90 million yesterday. Don't begrudge him one bit, but boy, that's a lot of money for a starter, but not a true difference maker. Joining us now to discuss a wild day at NBA free agency, and let's be honest, the Raptors legacy of Kyle Lowry. Vivek Jacob joining us now, CBC Sports, Complex Canada. Before we get into the wrap stuff, I just wanted to commend you. Great job throughout the Olympics, obviously the lead up to it with the qualifying tournament as well. Thoroughly enjoying your work that you're doing for CBC.
Thanks so much, Brent. It's been a bit of a whirlwind with the action on nonstop, but I'm loving every second of it.
So before I do dive into the wraps, what happened with the Canadian women? They were a medal threat. I know everyone was very upset about the Canadian men not even making it there. The women, they were supposed to be our bright light leading the way and didn't even qualify for the medal round. Were you surprised by that? Obviously, fourth-ranked team heading into the tournament. Pretty surprising, I would think.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit surprising. It's disappointing when you look at the fact that they were saying all along that it was metal or bust for them. But then you look at who they had to go up against, Spain. All they've done is beat Canada over and over when they've matched up. And Serbia was coming in hot. They won the Eurobasket, the European Championships, and so they were looking great coming in. So you knew that game was going to be pivotal. And to have that one right off the bat where Canada didn't come out shooting the ball well, and then they had to fight back to make it close in the end. And then it comes down to the point differential. I'm not a huge fan, to be honest with you, about the point differential. I feel like those third-place teams should just play each other because, let's face it, if Canada had the opportunity to beat up on Puerto Rico the way Australia did, I'm sure they would have done it too. So that's just the way it works out. But, hey, at the end of the day, Canada couldn't control what they could control, and that's why they're out.
All right, Paris 2024. Hopefully we have a couple of Olympic teams to talk about there. In terms of the Raptors, Kyle Lowry leaving, going to Miami. I think anybody who thought he was on his way out felt like that was always the most natural home for him. Before we dive into his fit in Miami and what it means for the Raptors, just in terms of his legacy, it feels like we've all been kind of wrestling with it for, you know, we can go back to the bubble. We can go back to when this team first left Toronto. Definitely can go back to the deadline this year. What are you most think of when you think back on Kyle Lowry as a Raptor?
I think of heart. I think of just incredible passion and intensity and desire and just a relentless pursuit of what he believed was his own destiny. I mean, right from the beginning, he would say over and over again that it's all about chasing that goal ball. And for a lot of people in Toronto supporting the Raptors, that never felt like a realistic goal. But bit by bit, they pecked away at it in this We the North era. They got to the conference finals. They made that a norm, getting to the playoffs and competing at a high level, only to get undone by LeBron James. And that's the standard that he set. And then they go out and they get Kawhi Leonard and they get over the top. And I think that capped it off. That game six against the Golden State Warriors, no one will ever forget the way he came out in that game and said, this is ending here. This is ending tonight. And the Raptors are going to be world champions.
So we've talked a lot about what it means for Toronto and the Raptors and fans and you know, everyone here. How does he fit in Miami? How do the Miami Heat look with Kyle Lowry as the big addition this offseason? Is that a team that looks like someone that can threaten for a championship next season?
I'm not so quite sure on the championship front. I would still put the Brooklyn Nets above them. I would still put the Milwaukee Bucks above them. But when you look at Lowry being paired with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, you think of two-way players that play as hard as anyone. And I think that is something that is going to make those other teams earn every bit of a win that they get. And so in a seven-game series, you obviously wouldn't write them off on any level. You look at having a coach like Eric Spoelstra, obviously that combination is what's going to be tough to overcome. And so you give Lowry, you know, a big like Bama Adebayo, you give him some shooting that they'll have in Tyler Herro and Duncan Robinson. And based on the reports that we're seeing so far, I think that is something that he'll thrive off of. And he'll enjoy being a leader alongside Jimmy Butler. Both of them love to play hard and take no excuses, make no excuses. And that's exactly the type of Miami Heat team that we'll see next season.
Sportsnet today, talking to Vivek Jacob here, Brent Gunning, Justin Bourne alongside me. Text line's open, 590-590. Please include your name and location. You mentioned the big there, and man, it's just so frustrating thinking how different last year would have gone. And I know eventually they got whacked by COVID, and it felt like there was never any chance of recovering from that. But if this team just had a couple capable bigs, it seems like everything would have been so much more different. Now, looking ahead to next season, I know losing Lowry hurts a lot. They do have the mid-level exception to kind of work with. If they're able to land a serviceable big or a couple of bigs that can play rotation minutes for this team, just how good do you think the Raptors can be without Kyle Lowry?
If they can address the center position, maybe get a bit more shooting on board as well, I think they can be a low-end playoff team. We mentioned Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia. I think that would be the top three. Then you would put Miami there. Then you're looking at Atlanta and Boston. And beyond that, you know, maybe they're in that mix with the Knicks, and maybe the Wizards look better now. And I would put them in that category right now. Obviously, we have to see how much just being back in Toronto, hopefully, would change things. And obviously, Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, those are guys that love to prove themselves, and they will be looking at this opportunity without Kyle Lowry to say, hey, we can keep, you know, get this show back on the rails and keep it moving. And for Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam, I think that's the biggest thing. And OG Anunoby joining up with them as well.
So the fan base loses Kyle Lowry, but they gain themselves one Scottie Barnes. I know there is differing levels of excitement about that depending on where you stand on how the draft went. But I, for one, as a lover of all things online content, love him already. What should fans expect from him on the court next season? And then as a forecast into his future, if you have some thoughts on that, it'd be great too.
Yeah, for sure. I think with Scottie Barnes, you're getting a player who can defend all five positions, and I think that's the thing that appealed the most to the Raptors. His defensive flexibility, versatility that pairs along with OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam. Bobby Webster, GM, was saying that, you know, he would love if he could get five guys that look like that in the starting lineup. And so I think from that standpoint, you look at matching up against teams like a Brooklyn, where you have the size of a James Harden and Kevin Durant and that combined skill as well. You look over at Philadelphia, they've got Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris. You look over at the New York Knicks with Julius Randle. Across the Atlantic Division, they're going to be going up against a combination of size and skill, and that's where Scottie Barnes factors in. Offensively, it's going to be a bit of a journey, and so when you're projecting to the future, that's going to be what he needs to sort out, that jump shot. From a passing standpoint, vision standpoint, he's got that, and he's going to continue to work on that. Obviously, with rookies, it takes some time to understand the NBA speed, the NBA physicality, and playing through that. So I think that's the journey for him, that offensive side of the ball and figuring things out. Wouldn't be surprised to see him come off the bench this season as he continues to learn and grow and then sort of figure out his niche alongside the other vets on this team.
I mean, he's the fourth overall pick. Obviously, the team has incentive to use him and develop him, but just the fact that he's able to kind of step in from the jump and be that plus defender, or at least league-level defender that Nick Nurse loves and wants to harp on, it feels to me like there's the road to minutes there. In terms of Trent Jr., he ends up making pretty much the same amount of money Powell made, albeit on a shorter-term deal. Do you expect for him to fit in a little better with this group? It felt like after the trade last year, obviously Norm was such a part of this core, this group, and the group had been together for so long, and then you throw someone new in like Trent Jr., and I don't want to make it seem as though Fred VanVleet was icing him out or Malachi Flynn was trying to ice him out, but it just felt like he was very disjointed from the team despite some big scoring nights. Do you expect him to kind of fit a little better this season, or what do you think his role will be? Because it seems to me, if you're looking for scoring, yes, I realize throughout the league this isn't a guy you point to and say he'll get you buckets, but I feel like he can get you some buckets.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brad. I think he can get you some buckets. I think he'll fit in better this season. I think just having a full training camp and then going into a more stable environment that the Raptors expect to have, I think all of those factors will play into him just performing better. And I think understanding his teammates and having the security of the reported contract that's out there, I think that will aid him as well. And defensively, you know, we talked about Scottie Barnes defensively. It's kind of the opposite with Gary Trent, and he's got to fit in a bit better on that side of the ball. And you'd like to think that having those other pieces and stabilizing that center position will maybe not just hide some of his weaknesses, but also push him to be better. You know, when you're around all those great defenders, it should push you to be better.
It's a good point. It's like kind of living with, I made a huge mistake when I was at university. I lived with a bunch of healthy guys, gym guys, who are always going for runs and stuff, making me feel bad. You would have thought it raised my level. I can confirm it did not. You raised our level today. Thanks so much for the chat, Vivek. Always appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thank you.
There he goes. Follow his work, CBC Canada, Complex Sports Canada as well. He's been doing great stuff on the Olympics. He's tweeting about track this morning, which I was locked into. But yes, some great Raptors thoughts from him there. It does seem to be like that's going to be the question for this team. Just how much of a black hole will be there without Kyle Lowry. Obviously, Fred VanVleet's ready, willing, able to step in and deal with a lot of that. But it just feels like with Kyle Lowry, there's a certain amount of unknown that you'll just never know how everyone in that room will react until he's gone.
Yeah, these are the type of situations you're left in when you're not a good enough team. And that's not a slight. I just mean, like, not good enough to contend with the big boys when you go, you know, who's it going to be with the, you know, with the ball in the big minutes, and how's this going to work out? Those questions usually come back to bite you at some point. So I'm hopeful, but we will see.
Yeah, we will see. We'll hear from you. 590-590, include your name and location. Justin Bourne's mic is plugged back into his phone. Lovely there. Technical difficulties, always fun working from home. McKee, give me a head nod if you want to weigh in here, or you're just going to read some text for us on the McKee, you got some thoughts? All right, what do you say? We're talking Gary Trent Jr. He felt like a lost child out there at times, just getting bullied a little bit by the core. Hopefully he fits in better. Where are you at on this Raps team heading into 2021?
I wouldn't say I'm high on them heading into this season, if I'm being honest. You know, like our boy Vivek laid out very beautifully there. He's like, well, you know, they're definitely not in the top three. And then, you know, they're not in the next tier. And then they're maybe in that next tier. And it's like, yeah, they're going to be in a dogfight to be in that, like, play-in series, right? That's probably, like, they're kind of the – if they're doing that again next year, is that a permanent thing? I don't know if they're just trying that out. No, okay, so that's a permanent thing. Look, I think it's going to be a little bit of a tough year. I really do. I think that maybe getting them back to Toronto can be a helpful factor. Maybe they can win some home games or whatever. But, like – I wouldn't be betting a lot of money on the Raptors' win total over this year is what I'm saying here. I you lose a guy like Lowry, and what you guys have been talking about, you know, that one guy that you kind of look to, you know, the moment it gets tough, and they have Fred VanVleet, like we've said, who has big moments and has big games and big moments and whatnot, but a lot of it is because of Kyle Lowry being around. Like, you look to that, to have that Kyle Lowry guy, and he's just not there. It's going to be stark for you. So we'll see. If you guys, I just saw a text on here talking about Scotty Barnes. This whole weekend, like I said to you guys, was just all the content was directly content at me to make me feel like a dick for talking about how much I wish they took Jalen Suggs. So it's been a tough weekend for the Raptors, in my opinion. I just really don't know what they're doing.
You mentioned the win total there. I am actually dying to see what Coolbet sets the win total at, because I feel like, again, I'm not expecting this to be a great team. I am expecting it to be right where both of you guys are, in that 7-8-9 conversation in the East. But I just think with a guy like Kyle Lowry leaving, and there's just a weird malaise around the team, I bet that number is going to be pretty low. And I think I might want to jump on the over. Not that I expect a ton from them.
Little value.
Little value is what I'm getting at. We'll have lots of time this month to kick around NBA, NFL, NHL over-unders. I have a feeling that's something we'll be doing. We're going to read some of your texts, kick around some more Raptors thoughts as well when we continue. 15 minutes left here on Sportsnet today. You know, I've been pumping the text line all day. 590-590, include your name and location. And Bourne, I know you're very excited to talk all sports, as you've made very clear. But sometimes some hockey news just comes out while you're waiting to start your last segment of the day, and I have to drag you back into the depths of hockey. You know, Wayne Gretzky is going to be a commentator down in the States. And I just saw a couple of moments ago, because it went so swimmingly for him on a network that we will not talk about, John Tortorella will be working for ESPN as a commentator down in the States. That'll be fun. Anytime we can get Torts involved yelling at something and being frustrated with where he is at in life, it's going to be a little fun. I got to be honest.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm hopeful that Torts provides value in that role, right? He should. He obviously knows what he's talking about. He's got an opinion. He's not afraid to give it to you. In theory, it'll work. I don't know. There's a lot of names that are in theory very, very good here. This is going to be fascinating to see. What you got, Sam?
So is this a permanent thing now? Like, is he going back? Yes. Is he going to coach again? Do you think he'll get another job?
No. I think he's probably with ESPN. I bet he signed a multi-year deal, I would guess.
Do you think a team would do that, honestly? Because I don't know. Have we gotten to the point here where we just know how it ends and everybody doesn't want to do it?
Listen,
or is there going to be the team that needs the kick in the butt guy?
Pierre McGuire just got hired by an NHL.
Oh, you guys, jinx! Jinx!
Jinx. No, like, it's no one's ruling out Torts getting back in the game. So it's possible. But no, I don't think he's I shouldn't say. I don't know. Some teams value exactly what he is, and it only takes one team, right?
Well, then get out of here, then.
Yeah, that's what he thinks about that. That is what I'm saying, Brooksy. The thing is, there's always going to be a team that looks like it just needs a punch in the mouth, a slap in the face, needs to be woken up. And I'm not saying that's the guy I would go about doing that, but if you're an owner whose GM needs to hire somebody, that's somebody you've heard of and you know exactly what it is. So, yeah, I'm not ruling it out either.
Daryl Sutter was literally scooping poop in a barn somewhere, and they were like, "Will you coach in the league?" And he was like, "Yeah, how much? Let's go."
Daryl's back. Yell at these kids for a couple mil a year. Sounds great. All right, McKee, man, I didn't expect to go there, but I'm happy I saw that news before we finished up today. Anything else on the text line jumping?
Yeah, I got a couple. Lots of texts about the Raps. I guess it should be expecting that today. But they won a championship in all caps because of Kawhi. There would be no statue talk for Lowry if it wasn't for that trade. The only statue the Raptors should have is of DeMar, because without of his sacrifice, the Raptors don't win. You can't have a statue of a guy who won a championship while being held hostage. Okay, that's a really nice warm take on Lowry Appreciation Day. Thank you for that, nameless guy.
I think it's just weird that you don't put his statue with all of the Leafs guys, right? Like, you do not put him behind the bench or standing next to Matt. He gets his own neighborhood,
coach.
Right? He's the coach, yeah.
What is this guy talking about DeMar, though? Like, have you ever had a great meal at a restaurant and been so you've been like, oh, the money I spent, the dollars that went out of my hand were the best part of that? No, you're grateful for what you got for the money. You're grateful for the meal. Kawhi was the meal.
Here. I cannot say it enough. And I love DeRozan, everything he meant to this franchise. The ultimate sacrifice was made, and we thank him for it. And that's enough. We shake hands and go about our merry business. McKee, where are you at on that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I definitely go back and forth on that situation where it's like, oh, they definitely, you know, Kawhi, it wasn't the only reason that it was Kawhi. And then, you know, you look back on it, it's like, well, kind of was Kawhi, was a lot of it. Like, I really do struggle in the whole,
of course.
You know, the whole narrative about the entire Warriors team getting hurt. And, you know, you see, I don't know if you guys saw the clip of Gilbert Arenas talking about the Raps there the other day. He was just, like, torching them, saying that everyone will forget about the championship. That hurts me. I'm your typical Toronto inferiority complex guy that anytime I see somebody slagging on that Raptors championship, I get extremely mad. But guess what? I have a hat. Says championships 2019, flags fly forever. You can't take it away, but there definitely are some contributing factors to that championship that make me feel a little
always
uneasy.
Always. There's always contributing factors. All you can do is be a great team and get yourself into the handful of teams that can win it if things go well. It doesn't always go well. Sometimes it does. You just have to be in a group of teams that can get lucky. And when you get lucky, you don't say, thank goodness we got lucky, that's why you won. You say, we were good enough to be in that group of teams. That's what a championship is. No, none of this. Everything else doesn't matter. Throw it away.
So true. Think about this year. Bucks, everybody hurt. Cool. They got their title. Royals, great. The Amish kids stole the homer. And then they went on to win the World Series. Just all of these different teams that, oh, but this thing happened. Yeah, something happens every year. You occasionally have a Warriors team that is just completely dominant. Oh, the Leafs will never get lucky. The Leafs are the team that the bad thing happens to be a positive note in someone else's story. Never, ever will that happen for the Leafs.
No. Playoff run this year was like I was taping game one of the Leafs' first playoff game because I was like putting my son to bed and I just like wasn't ready for it to start. And like I came into the game as it had already started before I could rewind and Tavares was already on the ice as it happened. But the first thing I saw from the playoffs was Tavares on the ice and I was like, no way. Just not a chance. But of course.
I know we've talked about it so much. I really don't think we can overstate how messed up it was that's what happened 30 seconds into or 10 minutes into the Leafs playoffs. It really cannot be overstated that the captain went down like that. And, of course, it had to lead to a Montreal Canadiens Stanley Cup near run. Oh, man, boy. On Kyle Lowry Day, this is how we end the show. Bordy, it's been a ton of fun. We'll be doing it the rest of the week. Producer Sam McKee, always love hearing from you. You guys on the text line, 590-590. Keep them coming. Keep listening. Don't go anywhere. Tons of great programming on Sportsnet today, including hearing from the Blue Jays front office.